Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. The longest war in American history is now officially over. We'll have details about this historic announcement on today's show. Here in East County, we'll also have two important updates for you on Alpine's battle to have a high school built, including a change of heart by one Grossmont board member and a lawsuit that had its first hearing in court. Snow is forecast across much of East County just in time for New Year's, down to very low elevations. Find out which communities and freeways may be affected in our weather report. Governor Jerry Brown has named a new head of the California Public Utilities Commission. Find out who his pick is on today's show. If you're planning on traveling to Mexico, be sure to listen to our report today on an expanded warning for Americans from the U.S. State Department that now includes border regions in northern Baja, including Tijuana, Mexicali, and Rosarito, Mexico. Many Mexican states are now considered risky for Americans due to increasing violence that includes kidnappings and murders of U.S. citizens caught in the crossfire. The Chargers are teaming up with the county to help find adoptive homes for children. Find out how on today's show. We'll also tell you how to get information on recycling your holiday tree and on Green Scene, why some venture capitalists are taking action to protect public lands. Our newsmaker today is Kelly Fuller with Protect Our Communities Foundation. She'll be talking about a federal crackdown on wind farms that are killing birds and what that could mean for a proposed wind project in eagle habitat here in East County. She'll also be discussing Soytec's financial instability and concerns about the county's environmental impact report on four proposed Soytec solar projects in Boulevard. Plus, she'll tell you why her organization has concerns about an SDG&E plan for high-voltage power lines through Cleveland National Forest and other areas in our region. If you received an e-reader for the holidays, we'll tell you where you can get free workshops to help you enjoy your gift. We'll have all this and more today, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. The longest war in U.S. history is now officially over. On Sunday, the U.S. and NATO held a ceremony at their headquarters in Kabul to mark the end of combat in Afghanistan. U.S. Army General John Campbell, the commander of the International Security Assistance Force, stated, "Today marks an end of an era and the beginning of a new one." He added that the 13-year combat mission was filled with significant achievements and branded by tremendous sacrifice. The U.S. launched military action in Afghanistan in retaliation for the al-Qaeda terrorist attacks that killed over 3,000 people during the 9/11 terrorist attacks in New York and Washington, D.C. Ultimately, leaders of al-Qaeda, including bin Laden, were killed or captured, and the terrorists' base of operation in Afghanistan was routed, although at a high price. The war killed over 2,200 Americans and wounded nearly 20,000. At the peak of the war, the U.S. had 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. President Barack Obama says the past 13 years have tested our nation and our military. During his administration, 90% of the troops in Afghanistan have come home so far. Over 10,000 troops will remain in Afghanistan, however, to train, advise, and assist Afghan security forces in a new mission called Resolution Support, which also includes air support from any attacks by the Taliban. A portion of the troops remaining will be special forces. The number of U.S. troops there is predicted to be reduced by another 50% next year, and by the end of 2016, the goal is to have no U.S. forces left in Afghanistan, except at the embassy in Kabul. Afghan troops also suffered high casualties in the war, which killed over 9,000 Afghan troops and policemen fighting the Taliban. In addition, an estimated 10,000 civilians have been killed, according to the United Nations. The Obama administration also ended the Iraq War, withdrawing ground troops from there. Although airstrikes were later authorized in Iraq and Syria against ISIS forces there, no ground troops have been committed in those areas, however. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
There are two major new developments in the battle over a high school for Alpine. At the December 11th meeting of the Grossmont Union High School District, Trustee Jim Stieringer stunned fellow board members by announcing his support for unification. The effort by Alpine parents to break from the Grossmont District and unify Alpine Union School District to include K through 12 grades so that it can build the high school that Grossmont has failed to build. Stieringer stated that he initially opposed unification because he believed the Grossmont district would eventually build the long-promised school, but announced that he had changed his views on unification after coming to the realization that the Grossmont board will never build the high school. But since Priscilla Shriver is the only other trustee on the five-member board who supports unification, Alpine parents still have no confidence that Grossmont will ever support unification or build the school. The other major development is in a lawsuit filed by Alpine taxpayers and the Alpine Union School District seeking an injunction to prevent Grossmont from spending funds intended for the Alpine High School. Voters twice approved bond measures, Proposition H and Proposition U, that included funds for the project. A grand jury report sharply criticized the Grossmont Union High School District Board for failing to build the school as promised. On Friday, a Superior Court judge heard arguments in the case. The judge went into closed sessions with each side separately, then jointly, before continuing the hearing until January the 8th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's weather report. It's going to be a white New Year's across much of East County. A cold Alaskan storm is set to strike our region Tuesday night, continuing through New Year's Eve Wednesday night, the National Weather Service predicts. This storm is forecast to bring 2 to 4 inches of snow on mountain peaks, with snow also accumulating as low as 2,000 feet. That includes communities such as Alpine, Descanso, Julian, and Hakumba. Bundle up if you're traveling, since wind chill values will fall below zero in higher mountain areas. Snow will impact travel on Interstate 8 at Sunrise Pass and on Interstate 15 at Cajon Pass, the National Weather Service forecasts. In western regions of the county, rain is forecast and thunderstorms are possible, with a high temperature of around 61 degrees at Lindbergh Field in San Diego. The rain will top off a wetter than normal month. Since December 1st, San Diego's Lindbergh Field has recorded nearly 4.5 inches of rain, which is about 3 inches above normal. Ramona has received over 3 inches of rain, which is about 1.5 inches above normal for there. That's good news for reducing the risk of wildfires and helping recharge some wells in rural areas, but it's not yet enough to end the statewide drought, the worst in recorded state history.
Governor Jerry Brown has named a new president for the California Public Utilities Commission to replace Michael Peavy, who resigned amid conflict of interest and corruption controversies. Peavy had long been accused of overly cozy relations with the companies he was supposed to regulate, including San Diego Gas and Electric Company. The former chief executive officer of Pacific Gas and Electric Company, Peavy was shown to have engaged in secret communications with his former employer to minimize PG&E's liability for a gas pipeline explosion in San Bruno that leveled a neighborhood and killed several people in 2010. The governor has appointed Michael Picker to serve as the new president of the Public Utilities Commission. Picker served as renewable energy advisor to both Governor Brown and former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. The governor also appointed Leanne Randolph to serve on the Public Utilities Commission. She is the former chairwoman of the California Fair Political Practices Commission and past general counsel of the California Natural Resources Agency. In a prepared statement, Brown said that both Picker and Randolph share a commitment to seeing California achieve its ambitious renewable energy goals. So might Picker offer any improvements over Peavy in terms of willingness to look out for taxpayers and residents over utility profits? Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Planning Commission, told the Reader about her efforts to get help from Picker to protect residents from negative impact of wind energy projects proposed across her rural region in San Diego's East County. When Picker visited San Diego, Tisdale took him on a tour of a wind project in Campo, where stray voltage 1,000 times higher than normal has been measured inside homes nearby, and some residents have cancer. A Reader reporter later took the same tour with Tisdale and wrote this description. We now head toward the wind turbines on the Campo Reservation, and the closer we get, the louder the sound from the blades becomes. It's as if someone has turned on a vacuum cleaner in the back seat. Along the way, Tisdale points out various pieces of land that will soon be swallowed up by green energy. Tisdale told the reporter, "Everyone seems shocked when I bring them out here. I even took out Governor Brown's energy guy, Michael Picker. I gave him the tour, and he was overwhelmed and pretty aghast. And yet, when I said, 'Nothing's going to change, is it?' he said, 'The governor wants them everywhere.'" Picker did ask Tisdale to send him more information on health impacts, but took no action to address those impacts. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The U.S. State Department has broadened its warning for U.S. citizens regarding risks of travel to much of Mexico due to criminal activity that has resulted in deaths of 85 American citizens this year, including innocent bystanders. Kidnappings are also on the rise. 130 American citizens were kidnapped during the first 11 months of 2014. For the first time, the State Department's travel warning includes major cities and travel destinations in Baja California, including Tijuana, Rosarito, Ensenada, and Mexicali in the border region. Major concerns include criminal activity along highways, especially at night. Turf battles between criminal groups have resulted in numerous homicides, including shootings of innocent bystanders, even during daylight hours, the State Department warns. Travelers are also advised to exercise caution in Baja California Sur in the state capital of La Paz, as well as in Cabo San Lucas, major travel destinations that have experienced high rates of violence, including homicides. Other Mexican states that have travel advisories for U.S. citizens in effect include Aguascalientes, Chihuahua, Coahuila, Colima, Durango, Estado de México, Guerrero, Jalisco, Mexico City, Michoacán, Morelos, Nayarit, Nuevo León, San Luis Potosí, Sinaloa, Sonora, Tamaulipas, Veracruz, and Zacatecas. These states include many major resort and tourist destinations such as Acapulco. While millions of American citizens safely do visit Mexico every year, and there's no evidence that Americans have been specifically targeted due to their nationalities, U.S. citizens have fallen victim to criminal activity, including homicide, gun battles, kidnapping, carjacking, and highway robbery. Gun battles between rival criminal organizations or with Mexican authorities have taken place in towns and cities in many parts of Mexico. Gun battles have occurred in broad daylight on streets and other public venues such as restaurants. During some of these incidents, U.S. citizens have been trapped and temporarily prevented from leaving the area. Criminal organizations have used stolen vehicles to create roadblocks on major thoroughfares, preventing the military and police from responding to criminal activity. According to statistics from the Mexican government, kidnappings nationwide increased 20% over the last year. Only a fraction of the more than 100,000 kidnappings a year are reported to police, and the police have been implicated in some of these crimes. Both local and expatriate communities have been victimized. U.S. citizens are encouraged to lower their personal profiles and avoid displaying indicators of wealth such as expensive-looking jewelry, watches, or cameras. Be aware of your surroundings and avoid situations where you may be isolated or stand out as a potential victim. Kidnappings in Mexico have included traditional, express, and virtual kidnappings. Victims of traditional kidnappings are physically abducted and held captive until a ransom is paid. Express kidnappings are those where a victim is abducted for a short time and forced to withdraw money, such as from an ATM, and then released. A virtual kidnapping is an extortion by deception scheme wherein the victim is contacted by phone and convinced to isolate themselves from family and friends until a ransom is paid by the victim's family. Recently, some travelers to Mexico staying at hotels as guests have been targets of such virtual kidnapping schemes. A particular safety concern are casinos and other gambling establishments, as well as adult entertainment establishments, the State Department reports. Carjacking and highway robbery are serious problems in many parts of the border region, and U.S. citizens have been murdered in such incidents, though most victims who complied with the carjackers' demands were not harmed. Carjackers have shot at vehicles that have attempted to flee. Carjackers have used roadblocks, bumped vehicles to force them to stop, and run vehicles off the road at high speeds. The criminals are largely targeting new and larger vehicles, especially dark-colored SUVs, but even drivers of old sedans and buses from the U.S. have been targeted. Violent carjackings usually occur at night on isolated roads, so traveling between cities only during daytime and avoiding isolated areas can reduce your risk, although some attacks have occurred during daylight hours. The Mexican government has deployed federal police and military personnel throughout the country to combat organized criminal groups. U.S. citizens traveling on Mexican roads and highways may encounter government checkpoints staffed by military or law enforcement personnel. But in some places, criminal organizations have erected their own unauthorized checkpoints, at times wearing police and military uniforms, and they have killed or abducted motorists who failed to stop. So you should cooperate at all checkpoints, the State Department suggests. Demonstrations in Mexico are common, but can escalate into violence. Protesters in Mexico may block traffic on roads or take control of toll booths on highways. U.S. citizens are advised to avoid participating in demonstrations or other activities that might be deemed political because the Mexican Constitution prohibits political activities by foreigners, and such actions can result in imprisonment or deportation. The State Department, since 2010, has imposed restrictions on U.S. government employees' travel in Mexico, including banning night driving in many areas, and that means U.S. government personnel will not be able to respond quickly to help Americans in an emergency situation at night. For more detailed information on staying safe in Mexico, including the latest alerts, you can visit travel.state.gov. Up-to-date information on security can also be obtained by calling 1-888-407-4747, toll-free in the United States, or if you're outside of the U.S., you can call a toll line at 001-202-501-4444. U.S. citizens traveling or residing overseas are encouraged to enroll with the State Department's Smart Traveler Enrollment Program. And for emergencies involving U.S. citizens in Mexico, you should contact the U.S. Embassy or Consulate. For information on 10 U.S. consular districts in Mexico and links to their websites, you can consult the Mexico U.S. Consular District map on the State Department website for travelers at travel.state.gov. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. The San Diego Chargers have teamed up with the county's Health and Human Services Agency for their annual Join the Team Chargers calendar to raise awareness about children waiting to be adopted. The collaboration has proven to be a winning team year after year. This is the eighth year the calendar has featured Chargers players and children in the field welfare system who are waiting for a forever family. The goal of the calendars is to find a home for the children featured and offer information for individuals, couples, and families willing to consider sharing their life with a child in need of adoption. The calendar has proven to be successful in placing the majority of children featured in it every year. Overall, the county places more than 325 children in adoptive homes annually. But at any given time, more than 40 children are still waiting to find a permanent home. The calendars were revealed during the recent Chargers-Patriots game and are now available for free at San Diego County Libraries, San Diego City Libraries, Wendy's Restaurants, San Diego County Credit Unions, and North Island Credit Unions while supplies last. To learn more about becoming a foster parent or adopting, you can visit iAdoptU, that's with the letter U, or SanDiegoFosterKids.com. You can also call 877-423-6788 or 877-792-5437. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
There's a link between successful startups and the great outdoors, and members of a new national coalition say it's a profitable one that should be encouraged. Some of the investment and venture capital firms in the Conservation for Economic Growth Coalition are California-based, including DBL Investors. Managing partner Nancy Fund says today's business owners know that to attract and keep workers, and for virtual companies with workers who can live wherever they want, research has shown quality of life and access to public land are key components.
People that work for these companies pay a lot of attention to the recreational availability around them. And so it's not just a want-to-have or a nice-to-have. It's quite important to the ecosystem that is our entrepreneurial economy.
On Friday, Interior Secretary Sally Jewell is in Napa for a visit that could help underscore that point. She and Forest Service leadership meet with Congressmen Mike Thompson and John Garamendi to drum up support for protecting 350,000 acres of the Berryessa Snow Mountain region. Fund says the coalition isn't suggesting edging out more traditional extractive industries, but sees those resources as finite and their markets as fickle. Particularly in the West, she says, many areas have found they can capitalize on their natural beauty or even their remoteness as different types of assets that allow them to diversify.
We are able to balance our need for minerals, for timber rights, with the growing need we have for recreational preserved areas. And with a prudent management approach, you don't need to give up any kind of economic growth.
The Conservation for Economic Growth Coalition includes a dozen high-profile investors and CEOs who say they'll work together to encourage Congress and the President to step up public land protection through national park, national monument, and wilderness designations, and to reauthorize the Land and Water Conservation Fund next year. For Public News Service, I'm Chris Thomas.
This is Leon Thompson with some information on how you can help make this holiday season green. According to the National Christmas Tree Association, 25 to 30 million holiday trees are sold each year in the United States, and unfortunately, many of them are sent to our landfills. This holiday season, I Love a Clean San Diego and the County of San Diego have joined together to encourage residents to recycle their holiday trees instead of sending them to a landfill. Throwing away your holiday trees needlessly wastes a natural resource and decreases the life of local landfills. Trees and other yard waste can be easily made into compost and mulch, which are then used to improve soil health at residences, public parks, and local farms. Many communities now offer curbside pickup and or tree recycling drop-off locations. To find out where you can recycle your holiday tree, you can visit wastefreesd.org or call 877-R1-EARTH.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. There has been a lot of controversy involving some big energy projects planned in East County and what the impacts might be on birds and wildlife. My special guest today is Kelly Fuller with Protect Our Communities Foundation, and she is here to talk with us about some important breaking news that could impact the future of birds and energy projects here in East County. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, through the years, there's been a lot of controversy, in particular about wind projects. Let's talk about those first. How many bird deaths have been attributed to wind farms by the federal government officially?
Earlier this year, the director of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service testified to Congress that about 500,000 birds are killed at wind projects across the U.S. annually. And, of course, that's just an estimate. Nobody really knows for sure because not all the facilities search and not all the facilities give their information to the feds.
Now, for a while, it seemed as though these companies were getting a free pass. Altamont Wind Farm in Northern California, for example, was notorious for killing thousands of birds. Some of them were protected species, and yet absolutely nothing happened, even with eagles. But recently, the federal government is stepping up enforcement.
We had the first prosecution by the federal government last year of a wind farm for killing birds at a wind facility in Wyoming. So after that, another wind company, PacifiCorp, decided to sue the federal government to block it from releasing data about bird kills at its facilities to the Associated Press. A fairly outrageous case, a lot of environmentalists felt. And then last week, news broke that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was prosecuting PacifiCorp at the time, and there's just been a settlement in that case. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. What has happened is PacifiCorp has agreed to plead guilty for the causing the deaths of eagles and other legally protected birds, more than 300 birds total, at its facilities, and they're going to have to pay about $2.5 million in fines. They're going to be on probation for 5 years, and they're going to have to take steps to reduce bird kills at four of its Wyoming wind facilities. Now, it's important to note that the reason that they got in trouble was not that they're out there killing birds with wind farms. Everybody knows that birds are going to die at wind farms. What got them into trouble is that they did not follow the advice they got from the Federal Wildlife Agency about what they should do. And that's kind of the same deal that the oil industry has. Mm-hmm. The oil industry gets prosecuted when it kills birds at its oil drilling facilities. But that happens if they ignore the advice from the government about how to reduce those deaths.
There you go. So if the government were to tell them, look, we don't think you should put a turbine here or there, or we think you should curtail certain
yes.
turbines during migration season, for example, and they ignore that, that's where they're going to get in big
that's
trouble.
That's when they're going to get in trouble. And the reason that it matters is that technically any one of these deaths of a bird is illegal under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. And with eagles, you've got the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act as well. But what the government has been doing, because they don't want to discourage wind power, they have not been prosecuting until these two cases. But these cases are great. First off, it shows that the administration is now very serious about not giving a free pass to wind, about treating the wind industry how it treats other energy industries such as oil. And it also means that we're likely to see better wind farms that kill fewer birds, because the companies now know they can't get away with ignoring the government. They have to listen. Now, that's really important for us here in San Diego County, because we have a proposed wind energy facility in East County called Tule Wind.
In McCain Valley, which is on Bureau of Land Management federal land.
And there's some additional land that belongs to the County of San Diego.
Correct.
And the
state and tribal lands. Yeah.
State and tribal lands as well. And here, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has been repeatedly warning Iberdrola Renewables, which is the project developer,
correct,
that there is high potential to kill legally protected eagles and other birds. The Fish and Wildlife Service has asked that part of the project either be moved to a completely different location or to be completely redesigned. They have asked repeatedly for the company to apply for a permit related to eagle deaths over the entire facility, not just one portion of it, as the company wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like this company, Iberdrola, might be taking a big risk if they just go ahead and
yes.
build it the way they want to do
yes.
it and ignore that advice. The fines could be quite substantial.
The fines could be substantial, and unless they change what they're doing, they're on the same path that led to Duke Energy and PacifiCorp being prosecuted.
In a way, it's even more controversial here, because we've had big issues about the reliability of the eagle studies that were done by none other than David Bittner, who's the discredited eagle expert who was actually convicted in federal court of refusing to turn over data he collected. He was found to have four freezers full of dead raptors illegally, and he didn't have any of the permits he was supposed to have. And yet his studies are what Iberdrola relied upon in trying to determine that its project wouldn't pose a serious threat to eagles.
It's been really difficult for the Fish and Wildlife Service, because they haven't known, in my opinion, they really have not known how much they could rely on the eagle and bird studies that have been done. They have highly criticized them, if you mm-hmm. look at internal documents. They have been asking for more eagle studies, and in fact, in August, when the Fish and Wildlife Service rejected the company's application for an eagle permit, one of the things that was said was, you need to do more eagle studies. You need to give us more eagle data. They were really, the government was trying to get more so they could know what's going on. So this question of data and who can see it is mm-hmm. really important.
And we have no data on how many eagles, if any, or other protected birds may have been killed by the Kumeyaay wind farm. I know I've tried to get my hands on that data, and it's considered secret or proprietary, and you cannot get your hands on it.
And this is one of the reasons why the lawsuit that PacifiCorps has done against the federal government to try and stop the release of data to the Associated Press is so important and disturbing.
Correct.
Because if PacifiCorps wins that lawsuit, it is going to get harder for the public to get that information. Now, why does it matter how many birds get killed? It's super important for the public to be able to know this, because we are trying to figure out, as members of the public, what are the best ways to move to renewable energy? What are the places that are safer right. than others to locate these projects? And you can't know that unless you can see the data.
At most, there's maybe a few dozen nesting pairs of golden eagles left in our entire county, even if you believe Bittner's data, and there could be even fewer, correct?
It's right now, it's hard to say. We're waiting to see the results. There have been other studies done.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. Geological Survey has been studying golden eagles in the county. I've not seen a public release of that information yet. But it's great that the government actually has put the money into trying to figure out what's actually going on in this county with eagles. And I think that's a reflection of what happened with the Bittner studies. We just don't know how good that data is. And that's a problem for the government when they're trying to make decisions about what to do with public lands.
Yes, certainly. Now, I understand that Iberdrola is delaying the implementation of this project. What's the latest on the Tule Wind?
It was reported by the County of San Diego in some recent environmental documents that in November of this year, Iberdrola went to the Bureau of Land Management and asked for about a two-year delay on when it can start construction on the project. So
why is that? Do we know?
That was not publicly disclosed in those documents. Time will tell. And generally in these things, the government does grant extensions on these. So mm-hmm. I would expect it's the most likely thing that will happen is yeah. that they'll get the extension. The good news is that would give more time for more eagle studies.
Yeah. And this is a good time to point out, by the way, that Kelly here is a real expert on birds, besides being the representative right now for the Protect Our Communities Foundation here in San Diego's East County. She is the former representative for the American Bird Conservancy.
What I did was lead a national campaign for them to make wind energy more safe for birds. So I worked at American Bird Conservancy leading their national campaign to make wind energy safe for birds. Tule Wind was a project that I was watching even in Washington because there was great potential for it to kill eagles in a county that is already losing so many of its golden eagles.
Right. They may actually go extinct if these things keep happening. Now, is it a safe statement to say then that any energy company looking to put a large-scale project of any type out here in San Diego's East County is going to face some pretty stiff advocacy on behalf of those birds from Kelly Fuller with all of your, background and expertise in this area?
I'm not going to say any facility, because it's always possible that there's some tiny bit of the county that I haven't looked at yet that is not problematic. But what I have seen in what has been proposed so far, publicly proposed, is deeply, deeply troubling. And we may be a whole lot better off mm-hmm. to not put the focus on these large-scale renewable projects in this county, but instead to use our abundant rooftop resources, get the solar panels on the rooftops. We've got all kinds of home and business rooftops that
right.
are sitting empty. The public loves rooftop solar. People love to have their own energy panels.
Yeah, I hear this over and over from people yeah. across the backcountry and other parts of the region. Why don't we do that instead?
Well, and the cost of those panels is dropping. So we are very shortly going to be at the point where a homeowner looking at their energy bills over multiple decades would be a lot better off. And I think we're already there.
Yeah.
They'd be a lot better off to put those panels on. We're also seeing some very interesting developments from companies like First Solar, who are trying to expand the opportunities for members of the public that are not able to put solar panels on their own roofs to invest in what's sometimes called community solar.
Very interesting.
Yeah, so we're seeing these wonderful new developments on rooftop solar. It's not necessary to build really damaging large-scale projects, at least in this part of the country. There are some parts of the country that are going to have to make really tough decisions. We have a much easier path. We just need to take it.
There you go. Now, not all solar is the same. While rooftop solar, it sounds like, is something that you're a big advocate of, there have been some serious issues raised about some of the industrial-scale solar that's been proposed for deserts, wetlands, meadows out here in San Diego's East County. And now there's a big controversy involving Soitec, which came in as sort of the darling of solar manufacturing in San Diego, you know, bringing jobs with a manufacturing facility right here. They were promising to put hundreds of megawatts of solar up locally and have only managed to do 3 megawatts, from what I understand. Now they're in trouble. Their stock has fallen in half. Reuters, as of this week, has them on their list of 8 companies that investors should avoid like poison, I believe was the term that was used. They lost a big project that they were counting on getting out in Imperial County, where it went to somebody else. And yet, our county has just announced the approval or the release of the environmental impact report for 4 large-scale solar projects that Soitec wants to build in Boulevard. What's your reaction to that, Kelly?
It's hard to understand what the county's doing at this point, and it may be just that things are moving so fast right now. On January 16th, there is supposed to be a planning commission hearing to discuss these proposed projects. And you can see that things are moving quickly because even in the final environmental impact report that was just released by the county, they analyze a battery storage facility that was not even included in the first document that the public got to see. So it's important for people to understand that if you have concerns about the Soitec solar projects in East County, you have until January 14 to make that known to the county. And the county has not made that real clear to folks. People have really had to ask about it, so it's really important that they know
that. Right, 4 p.m. on January 14th.
Right, super important. Now, why are people concerned? First off, if this company, they certainly look like they are in extremely serious trouble. They have gotten all kinds of bad press with what has happened just within like the last 10 days. They lost their contracts from people who were going to purchase that power.
Yeah, and that's right. SDG&E is now saying, too, that there are no power purchase agreements at all between SDG&E and Soitec, which is sort of the opposite of what Soitec has been saying, according to Voice of San Diego.
I can understand why they might be confused. It's confusing what's going on with SDG&E. On December 4th, SDG&E sent 2 letters of support for the Soitec projects to the county. So clearly something's going on with those guys. You know, who knows what it is.
Maybe SDG&E is having cold feet when they're taking a look at those financials and wondering if they want to buy power from somebody who is on financial thin ice.
Who knows what's going on? But it is worrisome because if the county does approve permits for these projects, then what happens if the company goes under? Are they going to try and sell those permits to somebody else? I mean, there's just a lot of questions that are
not
answered.
Who would maintain? What if they build them and then can't be around?
That would be very worrisome because one of the things that we saw in the early days of the wind industry, this does not happen as much anymore, but in the early days of the wind industry, was projects would get built and then abandoned.
Hawaii, the turbines, you see these rusting hulks of
turbines would break. They would not be removed, and they would just be out there. We do not want to see that happen with thousands of these trackers out in the Boulevard area. Yeah. But it's a question whether they could even manufacture all those trackers at this point.
Now, even if they did, and even if they built it, your group still has some concerns. I know that one of them is water. Mm-hmm. We've had a hydrology expert at San Diego State University who has attested that he believes there is not enough groundwater to build these. That's where Soitec was planning to get a lot of the water, and that it actually would draw down the water level to levels so low that it would likely not be recharged by rain, and that I believe in his words were that this could destroy the entire ecosystem or threaten the entire ecosystem of the region. So what are the specific impacts for wildlife, birds, and other wildlife from the 4 projects that Soitec wants to build in Boulevard?
The most obvious impact is the loss of habitat. And some of this habitat is needed for what's called connectivity, for corridors that allow wildlife to move between certain areas. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
Bighorn sheep. And
deer, coyotes, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Mountain lions. And with the habitat loss, there's potentially the habitat loss for a federally endangered butterfly species, Keno checker spot butterfly. Mm-hmm. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has asked for more surveys. They're not convinced that the butterfly is not out there, like the company has been saying. They want to see more. There is worry that through that loss of habitat that you're going to lose areas that animals like golden eagles use in order to hunt and eat.
What about the water also? Obviously, if this hydrology expert is right. Yeah. And the water from here, it isn't just Boulevard. These streams feed part of the Anza Borrego Desert. There are springs that I would imagine wildlife uses to drink from and so forth.
And it's more the thing to remember is that if you lose a lot of water, you can lose the type of vegetation that you have out there. Vegetation type can even change. If the vegetation changes greatly, that's the homes and the places where these animals feed.
Yeah.
And that completely makes problems for them.
And residents might be an endangered species. If your well water runs dry, that's a huge problem for the people who live out there.
The county has identified a couple of impacts that are really serious potentially for residents. They have said that the glare from the projects cannot be mitigated down to less than a significant level.
Right.
Now, that's kind of gobbledygook. What that means is, under California's environmental law, CEQA, you can't just put your project out there and do it. It has to meet certain standards. Mm-hmm. One of the standards is you have to do things to reduce all of the impacts down to a certain level. And by saying that the impacts are not mitigable, the county is saying they can't get them down. So they mention glare for the residents, glare for motorists in the area. So it raises questions
accidents.
About public safety. Yeah, so that is one. And then also the other great unmitigable impact in this is the visual impacts. It's going to have a huge visual impact in a scenic area. Now, some people don't care about that, but that is something that you are supposed to mitigate under California's environmental law.
Now, you also have specific concerns for birds with the large-scale solar project like this, and this is a concentrated solar panel technology. It's very efficient, I should add, and which is why Soytech wants to build it. But what are the specific concerns for birds?
So these projects would be making our backcountry birds into guinea pigs in that we don't know if this technology is safe for birds. We have not seen it in the U.S. on this scale. What we have seen on this scale are traditional solar panels at very large, on a very large scale at centralized facilities like this, and they have killed a lot of birds. And the worry is that the same thing could happen here. Now, we don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Is that because the birds mistake it for water, I've heard?
No one knows for certain, but it's thought that with the conventional giant solar projects, that the birds probably are mistaking it for water, and they come in for a landing, and then they get killed with collision, or they get crippled, and then a predator comes and gets them. So the worry is what's going to happen here at Soytech, because we don't know. It's that technology has not been tested on that kind of scale.
Kelly, earlier you mentioned concern about batteries at large solar facilities such as this. What is the track record involving batteries at other similarly sized solar farms?
We have not seen battery facilities at a bunch of solar farms yet. But we do know in West Virginia in 2011 at a wind farm that had a battery facility, they left the lights on for multiple nights and nearly 500 birds were killed.
500 birds were killed.
Yes. That's what's called a mass death event.
In just a few nights. Wow.
Yeah. And it may have been a single night. It was never clear exactly how many lights it took. And so in this case, the concern is not the battery facilities themselves. It's the lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that might be mitigatable if they just kept the lights off.
Yeah, and what would need to happen there is the county would need to get very firm in its permit standards and say, in its conditions, and say, you absolutely will not keep lights on that facility. Right now, they have not gone as to say that strongly. They just have been saying, oh, the company says they're not going to put lights on. You need to take it to the next step and absolutely put that in there in a condition, because there are many things that kill birds that we can't do very much about. But lighting is – night lighting in areas that have dense fog, like – Boulevard does.
Yes.
It's a well-known hazard to birds because they get confused, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're trying to navigate the lights. The combination of the light and fogs messes up their navigation systems. And it's just tragic, because what can happen is they can wind up circling and circling and circling until they either fall to the ground exhausted or they slam into the building. So we want to make certain that if these projects do go ahead, we don't think they should, but if they were to, that the county absolutely nails down that condition. And the public did not get a chance to comment on this in the draft environmental document because this was a late addition to the project.
And again, the deadline for comment on the EIR that's just been released is January 14th. Listeners, if you tuned in late, we're talking with Kelly Fuller with Protect Our Communities Foundation regarding concerns over birds and wildlife to the energy projects proposed in East County.
And it should be said that on the Soytec projects, that these are projects that a lot of environmental groups locally raise a lot of concerns about the environmental impacts, that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife also raised a lot of impact concerns about. And it's disappointing in the document that was released that some of these concerns have been ignored, not just from the environmentalists, but also from the agencies.
Give us a couple of examples of that.
For one example, the State Wildlife Agency wanted surveys for Swainson's hawks to be done. Mm-hmm. Swainson's hawks is a rare hawk, and they were not convinced they were not at the facility. The county has said no. We're not. That's not going to be required. In another example, the state agency and many environmental groups said, you haven't quite done these documents right. You haven't quite done this process right to follow the state environmental law. The county came back and said, essentially, yes, we have, even to the state itself, which was fascinating. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service had been critical of the Golden Eagle surveys done by David Bittner. Again, the county came back in this recently released document and said, oh, they're fine.
They said the David Bittner studies were fine. David Bittner was discredited and convicted in federal court.
Well, funny you use that word discredited, because the county said in their recent document that that word essentially should not be used, that that is not accurate.
So a guy that's convicted in federal court of failing to turn over Eagle studies, of pocketing $600,000 or more from the wind industry to come up with studies that say the wind turbines won't hurt eagles, when he was operating with no permits for years, he had freezers full of dead raptors that he wasn't supposed to have, that are illegal to have, and refused to turn over the tracking data to the federal wildlife officials. The county government, they don't have a problem with that?
No, they've doubled down on their support of him. It is mystifying.
Unbelievable.
And when you read something like that, as a member of the public, it's really hard not to believe that the fix is in. It's just a shame, because it's really important that we have faith in our county government. There are some excellent people there, and it's a complete mystery, some of the statements in that. Now, it needs to be remembered, of course, that the county doesn't actually write these environmental documents.
Who did?
An environmental consulting firm called Dudek.
Well, Dudek has had many controversies of its own. They're the ones that, as I recall, go around predicting all these projects aren't going to use a lot of water, and then they use, in some cases, several times more water than they've predicted, and yet they keep getting hired by these companies, maybe because they like the answers they come up with.
Well, at the end of the day, it is the county's document. And the county really does have to stand behind the work that's been done. But it is disturbing, again, to see that the county essentially doubled down on some things that they were folks, including the wildlife agencies, were really trying to let them know there are problems.
Yeah, serious problems.
But there is something to the county's great credit that I really want to give the county credit for.
Well, let's hear it.
The county is now proposing that the Soytec facilities, if they're built, if the company manages to survive all the terrible times financially it's going through right now, that the company would have to count the dead birds at the project and report that information to the county. This is something where folks, if they are concerned about this, could really put in a good comment to the county, which is, please make sure that that data will be available to the public.
Yeah, we don't want to have to be like Associated Press and go sue somebody or be sued, you know, for asking for the data. It's crazy.
Yeah, so yeah. It's super important that the public be able to see this. But again, it is to the county's great credit that they are planning on asking to see this data because, again, this is a guinea pig project. We really don't know what that technology is going to do to birds, and so it's very good that the county wants the company to look for 3 years for dead birds and then let the county know. The rest of us just need to be able to know that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and that's very encouraging, and I certainly hope that they're going to require that data be released to the public and to the media. Kelly, you mentioned there was a third issue that you wanted our listeners to know about.
We're expecting in February to see the final environmental review documents for SDG&E's Master Special Use Permit Project. And what that project is over 2,000 wooden power poles that the utility company would like to switch to steel and put much larger steel poles, put conductor or wire on that could carry four times more energy on. This would be in the backcountry, including through the Cleveland National Forest.
Now, SDG&E
public land and private land.
SDG&E calls this fire hardening, but it sounds like you have some concerns about it.
We're concerned that we think it's possible to fire harden without putting poles that are much larger out there and certainly without putting on wire that could carry four times the power. Because if you look at a map of where these lines would go compared to where renewable energy projects have been proposed in the county, there's a great deal of overlap. Mm-hmm. And so we think that there is a very good possibility that what's going on here is that this is the first stage of a larger project. And instead of showing us the whole project at once, we're only seeing phase one. Phase two would be down the road, upgrading some equipment.
When they're going to say, we already have these nice big power
right.
poles and lines here, let's
yeah.
add some things
and
to
phase
them.
Two would be upgrading equipment at the substation so that, lo yeah. and behold, they really could go and run much more power through. And one of the problems with this from a ratepayer perspective is traditionally the way the system's supposed to work is that if you are a renewable energy company and you want to build a renewable energy project, the costs of upgrading the system to handle your project, you're supposed to, as the energy company, supposed to pay for that. We're concerned that this might be a situation, and I say might because not all the data is in, but this might be a situation where what's happening instead is the ratepayers are going to have to pay for a cost that the energy companies are really supposed to pay, that it may be a cost transfer. Now, it's very hard to know what's happening because the California Public Utilities Commission is not allowing the public to look at and examine the costs of this project. Normally, for a $500 million project, and in this case, $450 million project, you would have to allow the public to participate in looking at the cost, looking at the reasonableness, the need for it, all of these things. But because these power lines are allegedly under 200 kilovolts, mm-hmm. they do not have to go through that process. They go through a much smaller environmental review process.
So if the public wants to weigh in, if they want to learn more, or they want to put comments in about this project, tell us the name of it again and how and where
this
they can
do that. This is SDG&E's Master Special Use Permit Project. The California Public Utilities Commission has a special website for it. Mm-hmm. And what's coming up is the final environmental review documents will be coming out. We're expecting them in February. We do think that there will be some kind of hearings in San Francisco in mm-hmm. the spring, very limited. And I want to make it very clear that Protect Our Communities thinks fire hardening is a good idea in the backcountry.
Sure.
We're not sure this is the best way to do it. And unfortunately, right now, the PUC is not really cooperating with, you know, allowing people to do that. But there's still opportunity to put comments in.
Very good. Can you tell our listeners who may not be familiar with the Protect Our Communities Foundation a little bit more about the Protect Our Communities group and where they can get more information?
Protect Our Communities has been around since about 2007, and we were formed to really look at hard the Sunrise Power Link transmission line.
Yeah.
Since then, we have really blossomed into a group that not only does environmental protection and protection of the backcountry communities, but we look at energy projects all over San Diego County. And for instance, we have sued on the Pio Pico natural gas-fired power plant. So anybody that's interested in us, you can find us on the web at protectourcommunities.org. And we really look forward to seeing San Diego move to an energy future that is less damaging and more locally controlled than the one we've got right now.
Very good. And you are a nonprofit, I assume run on donations and so forth.
Yeah, donations and volunteers. And we're always happy to talk to folks that want to get involved.
Very good. And listeners, if you tuned in late, we've been speaking with Kelly Fuller with the Protect Our Communities group here in East County, and we will be posting the full interview on the internet at eastcountymagazine.org after this show. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ.
Thanks for having me.
If you were lucky enough to have a tablet or ebook reader waiting for you in a gift box this season, the San Diego County Library is ready to help you use your new gift. From a large catalog of titles available for download to tutorials on how to use your e-reader to hands-on workshops to help you get started, there's something for everyone. Everything you need to get reading e-books is on one convenient page in the San Diego County Library's website. It's easy to browse the collection and select e-books you want. Just visit sdcl.org/ebooks or check East County Magazine's bookshelf section, where we have a link to the county's site at eastcountymagazine.org. Thousands of e-books are available for download. From Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl to Hunger Games Trilogy, there are guides to photography and plumbing, cookbooks, how-to guides, and even Twitter for Dummies. Just like any library book, they're all free of charge and accessible to anyone with a county library card. An added bonus, e-books are automatically returned to the library, so there are no late fees. The library provides online instructions for Apple devices, Kindle and Kindle Fire, Nook, Sony Reader, Android, Windows 8 devices, and MP3 players, including video tutorials for many of them. If you're looking for more personal instruction, the library also regularly holds ebook workshops at 8 of its branches. For more information, visit sandiegocountylibrary.org. That's sdcl.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.